That's right. This is Coast to Coast AM, and we have quite a conversation in our hands. We're talking with Gary Heseltine, a serving British police detective who, over the course of 10 or more years, has compiled massive amounts of evidence from other police officers and their UFO sightings and encounters. And we're talking about over 400 cases involving 900 police officers. This is rock solid, irrefutable evidence. And Gary, just before the break, you were telling us about really an amazing case, a police officer named Alan Godfrey back in 1980, who had some missing time during a pretty profound encounter. And he was convinced to be regressed a few times. And tell us what happened during the regression.
Well, basically, what you've got to understand is even to this day, he has no conscious memory of what was recovered under hypnosis. So he has his real life memories, his conscious memory, but his subconscious memory was only revealed through these hypnosis sessions. And on each occasion, he revealed that he was in a room, on a bed, small objects. Now, this is interesting because in terms of British abduction reports, this was the first real major one in Britain, and he described these little objects as being 3 to 4 feet high, and he describes them as lamp heads and bulb heads, which again is not terminology that's used, so which adds to the credibility. And when it was 1980 in Britain, there were very few abduction cases known about Barney and Betty Hill, Villa Boris, that kind of thing, but very few, and this is the earliest one in Britain. They were putting machinery on his legs, etc., etc. Later on, he saw a humanoid figure with a beard and a skull cap and a gown that telepathically told him not to worry. And then his next memory is he's back in driving the car. Now, when this was first revealed, under his first session, he was hooked up to all heart monitors. And when he was asked various questions by the hypnotist, who was a professor in Manchester University, he became so distressed that they had to stop the interview because his heart rate was racing, etc., and they feared for his safety. So they had to cut it short. He subsequently was interviewed 3 times again, 2 different professors were used in alternate fashion, and over the course of that year, 3 sessions were recorded on video. He told the same story each time. And it was unlike anything before. Now, there was some physical evidence that backed it up. What we would now term missing time was established. The fact that there was a cut on his police boot and underneath the boot, and it was a new pair of boots, and he could not understand how he got this cut to it. There, inside the boot, underneath the sole of his foot, was a small dollar-sized coin-shaped object, red mark on his foot, which was irritating, so he had to go to the doctor's, got some cream, disappeared after a week. But these kind of physical manifestations are now seen quite regularly in the abduction scenario, but in November 1980, it was unheard of in Britain. So its significance is pretty immense.
Extraordinary.
I worked on the case for about 14 months, spoke to all the people involved. There were several other police officers that made partially corroborating stories in the sense of that there were 3 officers an hour earlier up on the moors, the Yorkshire moors, the hills, who saw a blue object streaking across the sky, making weird, wonderful manoeuvres going in the direction of where he later had his sighting. And then about a year afterwards, he received a letter from 2 traffic police officers who said, "We were parked up in at the side of the road and we saw this object moving towards where you later saw it about half an hour later." So there was partial corroboration that something very strange was happening that night. And there was also a school caretaker just 5 minutes before Alan had his encounter, was going out to open up a nearby school, and he saw the object moving over the rooftops in the general going in the general direction where Alan later had his sighting some 5 minutes later. So there's lots of circumstantial evidence case to say something very strange was happening.
Yeah.
And when we now look at that abduction case in context with what we now know about the abduction phenomena, it follows many of the classic patterns.
Okay, Detective Heseltine, in your professional opinion, a man who has solved crimes for 20 years. Do you think that police officer Godfrey, was telling the truth and this really happened?
Yeah, I do. I've always, when I'm asked this question, I always say, well, if he's lying, he deserves an Oscar, because I, as I say, I'm an advanced interviewer for suspects and witnesses. It's a lot of psychology in that training. And when I viewed the three videotapes, I literally viewed them alone and made the extensive notes. And he made what I would call involuntary little mannerisms, little movements that struck me as being totally real, that you couldn't make up. If somebody was going to portray this, they wouldn't make up. They were so bizarre, some of his little movements. In the Flintstones, Barney's driving the car and he's using his feet to stop the car.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, he actually does that when he's driving the police car. As he's approaching this object and he's suddenly realizing what it is, and his little feet start pattering away, and it's so bizarre. You think, well, if somebody's going to make this up, this just does not appear to be scripted, as it were, totally involuntary. And there's little mannerisms like that that convinced me that he was reliving the real account, and I certainly do believe that Alan had a very strange encounter.
Yeah, clearly. Well, we're talking with Detective Heseltine, and of course I have a lot of questions, but we are going to go to the legendary Coast audience for questions right after the break. Stay there. Welcome back to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for George Norrie. And we're talking with Gary Heseltine, who is a serving police detective in the UK. And he has amassed an incredible database of other police officers reporting on UFOs and encounters while on duty and off duty. It is a remarkable subject, and we're lucky enough to have him for the next hour taking your phone calls. His website is linked up right now through coasttocoastam.com. And let's jump right into the phone calls. Let's go to the first-time caller line. We'll talk to James in Union City, New Jersey. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you, sir. Rob, you're doing a wonderful bang-up job here. Detective Heseltine, my question for you is, I am 32 years military retired. I started out as an airman basic and retired as lieutenant colonel. I was a forward air combat controller. Actually, I was stationed at RAF Bentwaters when the Tunstall incident occurred. And in my time as a pilot, I have seen many inexplicable things. But my question to you, sir, is just exactly what sort of harassment, what sort of tragedies can occur to your career if you speak up? For example, in the American military and as a air traffic controller, if you speak of these things, you're immediately labeled as a nut and your career has a big fat period at the end of it. And is that the same thing that you've encountered, sir?
Well, in answer to that, there's quite a few questions there. First thing is, if you're around at the time of the Rendlesham Forest incident in December 1980, I'd like you to privately email me. If you go to my website, there's details on how to do that, but I'd like to talk to you because I've written a film script about that and worked with Colonel Charles Holt, who was the Deputy Base Commander for the last 4.5 years. So that's a very interesting case, Britain's most famous case. Interference, I didn't have any interference initially for the first few years. And then I did. I was disciplined, and I got a 12-month written warning. Now, that basically means it's one below a final written warning and then the sack. So, yes, it's a very stressful period, and I now have to operate under certain guidelines. I can't reveal which force I belong to, even though it's out there on the web, which I told them. You can't put the genie back in a bottle. But there are certain things that I can't say and do. So that's slightly uncomfortable. It restricts generally the number of interviews that I do, lectures, etc. And is one of the reasons why I shall retire early next year, all being well, so that I can reveal more, shall I say.
Great. All right. Well, let's keep going. The wild card line. Let's talk to Russell in Wasilla, Alaska. A lot of earthquakes up there, Russell.
Hey, yeah, no, not lately, but I appreciate you, Rob, having a guest, Gary. Thank you for coming forward. And I just got a couple of quick questions. One, is there any cattle mutilations over there, and is there any crop circles? And you can give me my answer off the air so we can keep moving, okay?
Thanks, Russell.
The answer to that is, in police terms, I have one crop circle-related case. It's one that I call the case that got away. People have often wondered whether there is a correlation between police and crop circles. I had one case. It came to me second-hand from a police officer who I've no doubt was telling the truth, who alluded to the fact that he had been told by his sergeant of a story in Wales where basically two lights were seen high above a hillside, and two police officers, a male and female officer, were watching these two lights dancing above the sky. Just as the sun came up, the two lights shot off into the distance, and when the sun came up, guess what was below it? A crop circle. Unfortunately, that sergeant will not go public, and I have tried and tried, because had that been the case, we'd have probably had the first definite correlation between the police sighting and the crop circle being made. But he won't go forward, and I have to respect that. A lot of people are frightened of the ridicule factor.
But he might in the future, so I'm sure you keep in touch with him, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's obviously one of those cases that would have been kind of a landmark case to have had that testimony on record. But obviously, now and again, every now and again, I'll go back to him and say, can you approach that sergeant? I never had direct contact with him. I had his details, but he didn't want to speak to me. The officer was acting as a go-between. He was verified as the officer, as being a serving police officer, but in the end, yeah, I have to respect what
sure
people say.
Sure, no, no cattle.
About mutilations?
Yeah.
I've no mutilation cases that relate to police. However, I've done a lot of research, and I know a couple of crop circle and mutilation experts in this country, and yes, animal mutilations, deer, cats, dogs, and sheep and cattle do get abused, shall we say, in this country as well.
Yeah, it's a big subject. Well, the next caller, I have a guess as to what they're going to talk about. From Shiloh, Illinois, Jim, you're probably going to ask something about that huge sighting involving police that happened a few years ago.
Well, I believe that happened and started out in Lebanon, and it moved its way down through Belleville Highland and through all the way down to DuPont. And yeah, five municipalities were involved, police municipalities. I was not in this area at the time, but I've heard already three people since I've been here 4 years that told me that they saw that UFO. Now, oddly enough, in 1997, 2 weeks before the Phoenix Lights, I was living in Las Vegas and saw that black boomerang that so many people witnessed going down through northern Arizona all the way down and ending up over Phoenix. And strangely, planes taking off from McCarran Airport were flying broad daylight, making, you know, taxing or around or trying to avoid that airspace, and you know the people out of one side would have seen it. It was just sitting there for 45 minutes, not moving in broad daylight. Did anyone say anything about Las Vegas? No, just the Phoenix sighting, which was very strange. Now, I've also had multiple experiences, and one in particular took place in Piedmont, Missouri in like 1974. Four or five, I kind of forgot exactly what date, but it was a lot of UFOs were happening back then in that area, and it made national news coverage. And me and my dad were driving, well, I was in the back seat of the Jeep down a two-lane highway in the middle of the country. Something whizzed by us so fast, two wheels of the Jeep came up off the ground and back slammed down into the ground. There was no vehicles in back or front of us. It was a straight road. Later on, I was at his frog pond, and I just almost got bit by a cottonmouth snake. And I backed up a little, and I saw something out of the corner of my eye. Now, I'm not any more than 70 yards from my dad's house. I can see it. It's in view. I'm right by this lake. I look over to see what is to my left, and it evaporates in front of me. It was a beige color. The next thing I know, I'm in the middle of the woods and can barely hear my dad's hammer. It took me 2 hours to relocate where my dad's house that he was building in the country was. I just wanted to tell you guys, this is awesome. Police are one of the best trained observers, but you know, we don't want to undercut the just general population.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've been here 4 years, and I've already talked to 3 people that have seen the UFO that came through here.
Yeah.
Lebanon, all the way down through Belleville, Shiloh, and DuPont.
That was a big case. And, well, Jim, thanks for sharing your experiences, too. And we're still going to take some more phone calls. Let's see if we can get one more in. Now, let's go to West of the Rockies. We'll go to San Francisco. Phil, welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, Rob, and hi, Gary. Thanks for letting me in here.
Sure.
I have to tell you something that happened to me, and we'll see if there's any other reports comparable. I used to live in the woods in the Midwest on the edge where there was a field across and an east-west road. Well, one night, my father and I were finishing some concrete in the dark. It was not very breezy, but first thing we noticed was the dog staring to the southwest. Just the fur was up and everything, and he was like he was ready to attack something, but you couldn't see through the trees at that point. Then, next thing, I heard this rushing sound, although the air was dead still, and as this thing came into view, it was like a fiery wheel just floating about 5 feet off the ground, following the road, going from west to east. And at that point, the dog's tail was between his legs, and he was turning around, coming back to us. Well, we hopped in the car. It took us maybe 20 seconds. Now, it's maybe a half mile to the nearest highway.
Okay.
We got on that road, went after it, although, frankly, we were a little bit on the chicken side. We weren't going too fast.
Okay.
When we got to the highway, we didn't see anything. We saw no taillights, no lights going up in the sky, no magic of this thing, nothing magic. This thing had just disappeared.
All right.
And it was so bizarre. We didn't hear anything about it in the community. But then about a week or two later, there was something in the newspaper in this little variety column where it was mentioned something sort of similar, but they didn't go into detail. And I just wondered if anybody had reported anything like that.
Well, not that I know of. Maybe in the calls coming up, they may. But now here's a question for you. Just going off of what Phil was talking about, a lot of times policemen will have dogs with them. Any cases where the dogs acted out or were involved in these encounters?
Surprisingly, I don't have one case where there has been any active dog handlers involved. I know of one case that was actually related to the Alan Godfrey case where a dog handler witnessed it, but his dog was in the van. No active cases involving dogs, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Well, we're talking with Gary Heseltine, and more phone calls after the break here, because this is sort of a rare opportunity to talk to a serving police officer, a detective, who has all of the information about every single case that has come forward involving police officers and UFOs. Now, talk about credible witnesses. Talk about trained observers. If you have a question for Gary, just give a call, and we're going to get to as many as we can next hour. By the way, George Norrie called in, and he said the wedding was absolutely grand, so that is good news. And we will be taking open lines after the top of the hour, too. So if you yourself are perhaps a police officer, if you are serving in some sort of official capacity, I invite you to call in, too, and share your experiences, because we're talking about primarily UK in this episode, but let's extend the subject to the entire United States. You're listening to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for George Norrie. Stay right there. We're coming back right after the break. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking with Gary Heseltine, a serving police detective who, for the past 10 years, has been gathering police reports from his fellow officers. And he's here on Coast for the first time, sharing those experiences and taking your calls right back after 120 seconds. We are back, and we're going right to the phones. Questions for Detective Heseltine. Let's go to the wild card line. David from Ocean Shores, Washington. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, Rob. Hello, Detective.
Hi.
Hi. David. I'm a police officer myself, 25 years in the job, sergeant, and I'm also the Washington State Director for the Mutual UFO Network.
Oh, great.
So it's a good combination. There are a lot of cops that are in the investigating UFOs because, well, investigation is what we do.
Absolutely. So what can you tell us?
Well, I just want to talk about a case we had where two of the officers in my agency last December had a sighting of one of these, the glowing red orbs. We're getting these calls all over the country over the last year in MUFON with just a glowing ball of light that drifts along and then takes off. And we had two of our on-duty officers saw this last December. And a lot of people have been asking about the stigma of a police officer reporting this. They had the advantage of being able to call me at home and know that I investigated, but one of the officers also called it in on the radio, and he's taken a little bit of grief for this. I heard another nearby agency actually adopted an unofficial policy that if you see something like this, you are not to report it on the radio.
Huh. And have you had a similar experience, Gary?
Certainly some officers have been told, don't report things. It seems to be a policy of every force has a slightly different attitude. Why that is, I don't know. But certainly many officers have what I would say will approach me, but will not go public with their cases. They want to be anonymous simply because they don't want to fear that ridicule factor, and that perceived risk is very palpable. And those are the two primary reasons why police officers don't come forward. And those that do risk ridicule, absolutely. And one of the reasons, one of my big fights is to kind of highlight this and highlight how unfair it is of the media to ridicule people who are quite genuine. And in all my 10 years, I've dealt with a lot of civilian cases as well. People approach me, and uniformly, they are genuinely real events that have occurred, and yet people are being made to feel as if they're idiots, and they're not. And I have to try to, in my own way, highlight this and fight it. I've just done two appearances on national terrestrial TV in England where I've taken on a skeptic and a well-known UK skeptic, and some people would say, well, you don't entertain these skeptics and get in debates, but my attitude is, well, let's take them on and start taking them on at their own game and dismantling their arguments bit by bit. And I think if you look on YouTube under my name, there'll be a couple of clips there that you'll see recently where that has been done. I don't want to just sit back and let people get away with the same platitudes. I think we have to be much more in their face now. We not angry, but we have to start standing up and saying, okay, let's have a debate, and I'm going to take you on and put these people on the spot, because skeptics don't ever quote in relation to what the witness statements have said. They take little bits out and make it fit for their hypothesis. They don't ever see us go out with the victims, the witnesses, and stand next to them and have those people relate those accounts to them. They do it from afar. We have to start getting more proactive against going after these people and exposing them from what they are, because they're doing it for their own agenda, but it certainly isn't for the public and for the truth.
Right. Well, Sergeant, how long have you been collecting police reports out there in Washington State?
I've been with MUFON for about 10 years now.
Okay.
I've had a lifelong interest in it, and it was actually a detective sergeant from another agency that got me into it, and he's still an investigator in the field.
Uh-huh. Well, do you feel it's a little hypocritical, or it's a little bit of a conflict of interest when you're told not to report these things on the radio, when your duty is to protect and serve the community? Don't you think it's a little strange that you are restricted when it comes to things just because it happens to be in the sky? It's suddenly off limits?
I do very much think that. We see something that is unusual. It doesn't match anything that would be a terrestrial aircraft, something. So we don't know what it is, unidentified by definition. It's something that we should be reporting. Fortunately, my agency did not take that attitude with the officers. And I've only heard this as a secondhand that this other agency said, you know, don't put it on the air. Don't put it where people can hear it over the scanner.
Yeah.
But it is very hypocritical.
Yeah.
People count on us that when a police officer makes a police report, we'll go into court. Our testimony carries a certain amount of weight because of what we do, and we're professionals. But when we come to this one subject, suddenly you can't believe what anybody has to say on it.
Yeah. Well, David, thanks for
what he's saying is there is absolutely true,
yeah.
And it's classic that there is this total. It doesn't make sense. Police officers, if it was a proper air crash or something like that, and there was a police witness, then he'd be the first person in court. Did you see this air crash, et cetera, et cetera? You'd be the principal witness. But when we're talking about UFOs, it totally goes off the radar, and it's bizarre how that happens. And I kind of correlate it with the way that journalists, serious investigative journalists, the amount of times I've shown them good evidence, and they go, oh, yeah. And I say, well, are you going to report that? Well, yeah, maybe, and it never does. So it's like they've got, you know, somebody is saying to them, well, yeah, you can go near this, but only on a certain terms, but don't do this. We don't want to rock the boat. And we have to start fighting against that kind of mismatch of information.
Yeah. No, I mean, imagine a world where the police were 100% on the public side. I mean, that's what it should be. More phone calls. They're just pouring in for you, Gary. East of the Rockies, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, hi, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, what's your question for Gary?
Hey, I've been studying UFOs for a long time, and I find it really interesting.
Okay.
I find it interesting that they're real, but they're actually non-physical. What I want to say is that UFOs are actually not space aliens from other planets. They're demons from hell to deceive us. They're actually the sons of God that came down in Genesis chapter 6 and would also return in the end times. Christ told us about this great deception, and it's people come back with Luciferian spiritual messages of ascension in 2012, New Age. This is the religion of the Illuminati. And the New World Order, it's satanic.
Wow. Well, Kevin, as interesting as that is, we're sort of more gearing this towards, we have limited time with Gary. So if you do want to call back during open lines, we can get to a little more extended conversation in the spiritual hierarchy of this. But now we're really focused on getting as many questions as we can. So let's go to west of the Rockies. Janet, Ogden, Utah. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, thank you. I have a little bit of a story and then a question. Back in 1964, my three brothers were with their scout troop, and they were camping out for the night. They'd had a hike and all that, and they were on the Santa Cruz beach. And they awoke in the morning to a big commotion, and there were all kinds of Air Force men and high ranking and police and all that, and they were surrounding this area that was cordoned off, and my brothers got up and went over to it, and there was a large circle burned into the sand. They said it looked like it had turned into glass, and they asked what it was, and one of the young men that was there said that during the night a UFO had landed there, and that they had had some contact and they talked with the people that were in the beings that were in the UFO.
Okay.
And they were told that if anyone ever wanted to have contact with a UFO, that all they had to do was to go to a remote place and to concentrate.
All right.
And that would bring them in.
It's a good start.
And so my dad and I kept thinking about it and thinking about it and we thought, God, that would be kind of fun, you know, and I don't know if that's weird to think that's fun, but in the meantime, we moved to Utah, and we kept talking about doing it, and so one evening, we finally decided to do it, and we drove up into the mountains by Ogden to an area called Snow Basin, and we started concentrating.
And what happened?
We saw this, I'll just say, vehicle coming towards us in the sky.
Okay.
Very rapidly.
Yeah.
And my dad said, "Do you see that?" And I said, "Yeah." And then the next thing we both knew, we were waking up and hours had gone by.
Wow. Another case of missing time. And
yeah, it was missing time.
Yeah.
And who would ever fall asleep with something that dramatic coming towards you?
I know. When you hear the same type of story told over and over again, in the case that Gary's talking about by police officers, it is simply hard to ignore. Do you have a question for Gary?
I was wondering if he'd ever heard of anything like that where it had been communicated that if they wanted, they could have communication by concentrating, and also if he'd ever heard of a case where sand had been burned like that.
Okay, thanks, Janet.
Right, first part is not by police officers, but I have heard that people who claim that if they get into a meditative state, that they are able to communicate. And I do know one astronomer, who's quite a well-known astronomer, but I won't give his name and embarrass him. But basically, he told me that he has had interaction with UFOs by concentrating, and they have shown, and he's asked them to show themselves, and they have. Personally, I've never done it, but who knows? Certainly, I think there is a lot more to the communication aspect than what we're aware of, but I kind of just stay in the... just trying to prove that they're here. The battle for me is let's take one thing at a time and let's bring credible people to the forefront. And that's my way of trying to say, well, to the members of the public that's out there, there is something really going on. So the more officers I get, the more people should listen to what these very credible people are saying.
Yeah. Well, great. Let's keep going. Wildcard line from Claremont, Florida. Diane is calling us. You're on the air with Gary Heseltine.
Thank you, Rob and Gary. I just have a really quick question. I grew up in central Illinois on a farm, and my family actually settled the county that I grew up in. And I had probably 20, 30 times growing up, green and red orbs out in the yard with my family. And every time it happened, I was kind of like in that in-between sleep stage. I had a mentally challenged grandfather who had a lot of strokes. And it was like he almost was the catalyst of the whole thing. And there was also a lot of UFO experiences with my other parts of my family. And we all lived on that same part of the farm. So my question is, how does, like, paranormal experiences and UFO experiences come together? I guess that's my question.
Do you get a sense of that, Gary?
There are certainly cases on the database where officers who speak to me who have hinted that there's been more to the experience, and there may well be aspects of missing time. But when I kind of tell them about the full nature of this phenomenon, a lot of them kind of go, well, I suspect things, but I don't want to go there. Is it like a paranormal experience? Well, I guess it is. I've never had a paranormal experience. I don't regard my UFO experience. I've had two off-duty sightings as well whilst I've been serving. Uh-huh. They're on the database as well. I think they're two different things. But what I would say, the commonality is that if you've had a paranormal experience, that it changes your perception of the way you would view the world. And I think that's the key thing there. Whether it be a ghost or whatever, or a UFO, it makes you look at things a little bit differently, and I think that's the key.
Well, I know you just focus on the UFO sightings with these police officers, but of all your stories, have you ever gotten ones that involve, say, time travel, or them seeing ghosts or apparitions or other types of paranormal experiences?
No, I'm not like that. I mean, in a slightly veering off, because I've done work on the Rendlesham Forest case, you would call it the Bentwaters case from 1980, which involves American US Air Force policemen in Britain. It's a very famous case called Britain's Roswell. Basically, I've got heavily involved in that. I've worked with Colonel Charles Holt.
Yeah.
And when you listen to two of the principal witnesses, Jim Peniston, Sergeant Jim Peniston, and John Burroughs, who were the ones who, on one of the nights, actually saw a landed craft. Peniston actually touched it. It's a very famous case. He has since been regressed under hypnosis, and they will hint at that their experience may be some kind of time travel related, maybe people from the future. The only problem with hypnosis is whilst it's anecdotal evidence, it's not evidence per se, because it's something you can't quantify. So it's interesting, but for me it's nothing more than interesting.
Yeah, there always seems to be, not always, but oftentimes there is a time travel component to this UFO phenomenon that simply cannot be excluded. Well, for first-time car line, we have Brenda calling from San Francisco. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. What's your question?
Yes, good evening, Ross, and many blessings to your guest. I've been sitting here listening to everyone in the discussion about UFOs, and I have, throughout my life, my 49 years, have experienced things and seen things. But I would like to know if there's anyone, Gary, who has experienced anything of within their home. If I may explain to you what happened to me.
You mean like a police officer off duty in their home?
Pardon me?
Like a police officer off duty in their home?
Well, this was something that happened to myself. And my stepfather, by the way, was a retired police officer. So, you know, there were things that happened to us as when I was a child. But I was a grown woman, a married woman, in my home in Morgan Hill, California. And I had gone downstairs to take a bath, and this was about 11:30 in the evening. And I was doing a meditation with a candle. I finished my bath and decided to go into the guest bedroom and just lie down in the bed for a little while.
Okay.
And 10 minutes go by, 10, 15 minutes, and all of a sudden I hear, now I'm downstairs, so this is a second-story house.
All right.
I hear, it sounds like a helicopter, and it's getting louder and louder. And before I know it, I feel like whatever it is, it's right above the house. And I got very upset because I felt that the military, you know, was doing something. But then, you know, nothing like that happens in Morgan Hill.
Yeah. Well, we're just coming up. We're just coming up to the end of it. Do you have a quick question, or do you want Gary to come in?
I do. Now I'm lying on my back.
Actually, we're actually out of time. Do you have a quick question for Gary before we run out of time?
My quick question is: has anyone ever experienced, after hearing something like this, a translucent being?
Well, hold on. Hold it right there. We're just out of time. Gary, thank you for joining us. And we will talk to you again, hopefully in the near future. We're listening to Coast AM. And we will be back with Open Lines after the break. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back to you.